I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Robin Steiff. Robin is the CEO and owner of Lunametrics, an internet consulting firm that recently celebrated its 10th birthday and is now an Inc. 5000 company. Lunametrics is Robin's second entrepreneurial endeavor. She is a graduate of Harvard College and the Harvard Business School, and Robin recently won a Businesswomen First Award in Pittsburgh and also won a Diamond Award for leadership. Robin, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And I also want to thank Brian Honigman, who was a guest on episode 59 of Smashing the Plateau, who connected us. So yes. I wondered if we could start off by you telling us a little bit about your, what is it that you're passionate about? Why did you end up pursuing the path that you've pursued?
Well, actually, a lot of people have asked me that. How did you get into this business? It's not like I've been... I was a techie or had a long experience with it. But the truth is, my first job out of business school was at IBM. And at IBM, I worked in direct, back then they called it direct mail marketing. And it was all about the same work that we do today here at Lunametrics, but not online. So we did things like A-B testing, but we were testing envelopes, right? Which envelope pulled better, this one or that one? We were all very focused on source, where people came from and made purchases, so conversion. So I could kind of go on and on, but I love analysis and numbers. And so when I got to the point in the road 10 years ago and needed to decide what I was doing next, I thought, I'm going to do something with this passion.
Interesting. And what was your first entrepreneurial endeavor?
I owned a gift business called Send Me No Flowers. And I owned it for 12 years.
Interesting. Were there numbers involved in that too?
Well, you know, I was always working very hard to get the people who took the orders to find out what the source was and then to sit down and do the ROI to understand whether purchasing this mailing list made sense or that emailing list or whatever it was. Remember, this is a while ago. So yes, there were, but not like there are in my current business and not like there were at IBM.
Interesting. Sounds like three very different tracks.
Yeah. Yes. And there's a few in the middle that we didn't even talk about.
Now, do you think that having a Harvard MBA is something that is, like a through line, a theme in all this or not necessarily?
For every one of those, maybe not. I mean, certainly every one of those, I was just passionate about the data. But, you know, I don't need to have an Harvard MBA to be passionate about the data. I think that my MBA has helped me, certainly has helped me in this job, and really helped me in my last job, which was not entrepreneurial, where I was the chief financial officer. So it has been helpful to my career, but perhaps not for every job, every opportunity.
Okay. Was there a big shift going from IBM to your first business?
Well, I didn't go directly. I went from IBM, and I moved to Pittsburgh, where I live now, to take a job in artificial intelligence. AI back then was before its time. Like it wasn't really ready for prime time. Leaving that opportunity and starting my own business was a really good thing for me to do right then, both personally and professionally.
Interesting. Yeah, I first heard about artificial intelligence. I had a friend who was at MIT in the 1970s working in artificial intelligence. I said, What is that? And, it's really, I think, come into its own relatively recently.
Right. Well, we see it everywhere we go now. We just don't even notice it. When our phones get smarter or our even our Microsoft Word gets smarter, and notices things. Or we could tell Siri, when I say this, I mean that.
Right. Right. So the interesting thing is, I come across a lot of people nowadays who have been working in corporate for a long time, and then they reach the point where what they really want to do is leave corporate life and start their own business. So the fact that you've been able to do it successfully is a real kudo, and many people would be envious.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that I would be a disaster in corporate life. Because so much of corporate life is about, you know, policies and procedures. And yes, we have them here, but, you know, we're a 25-person company. I think I would be terrible because I kind of like to stir the pot. That is one of the pieces of my personality. And it would just not go over very well in a big corporation.
I can relate to that. Having started my life in corporate, didn't work for huge companies early on, but I spent most of my life in smaller organizations, and yes, I like to stir the pot too. Mm-hmm. And once I started my own company almost 10 years ago, it was a big mind shift for me. So right. I can relate to that.
Right.
What do you think are some of the hardest tasks that we have to accomplish as business leaders?
Well, I think that the hardest task that the vast majority of people face, or of entrepreneurs face, is working on their business and not in their business.
That's huge. It's huge.
It's just enormous. And the reason, I heard someone once say that beauticians should start law firms and lawyers should start beauty firms or hair places. Because one of the reasons that we often have that problem is because we're so good at what our companies do, and that's why we started them. So I faced that problem in a big way when I had my first business, and I really learned my lessons there. And then here, it wasn't that hard because as things got more and more technical, I brought more and more strong techies in, and I'm not a strong techie. You know, my skills are in management, and so I'm smart enough now to let the techies do what they want and ask them questions when I need help.
Yeah, you know, it's the classic situation that the book E-Myth talks about, where you're good at what you're good at, you know, either as a technician or a professional, and you start a business because that's what you know and that's what you do. And the question is, how do you actually turn that into a business as opposed to a single person performing a function? And even if you're a single person performing a function, you still need a way to get the business and to manage the business and to be able to keep customers happy. So you, even as a single person business, you have to work on the business.
Right. I mean, realtors face that in a very big way.
Yes.
And they kind of go through peaks and valleys where they're building their business and then suddenly they've built it and then they harvest and all of a sudden they have nothing.
Right. So it's like feast and famine.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The good news is when you have 25 people, you can have two of them be dedicated to building the business and the other is to doing. And so you can separate out the work.
Did you find that it was any kind of a mind shift to go through to be able to delegate and grow a team?
Well, yeah, but I know that this topic is one that you're going to want to talk about more later. So you might want to hold this because it's really was the hardest thing that I did. It was truly the ceiling that I needed to, deal with the thing that was in my way to make my business grow is the one you're talking about right now.
It's a really common one, and I come across it a lot.
And you know what? It's worse when you're a high control person. You know, if you're laid back, it's not so bad. But I am a high control person, so it was much harder for me. Than I think other people have an easier time with that one than I did.
So having gone through it. And I don't mind talking about this now, you know, this part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But having gone through it, what tips can you offer other people that may help them go through the same process?
I would never recommend to anyone what happened to me, which is that I went through tragedy. And like after going through personal tragedy, I sat down and said, okay, let's take a look at myself. And so I don't recommend tragedy for anyone. But what I could recommend is even for a couple of days, being on the opposite side of that stick or fence or whatever. So just recently I was, because as I was telling you earlier, I fell and broke my leg and had to have surgery, and I am still somewhat laid up. So I was at the home of a friend who gave me and gave to me for 3 weeks. But at a certain point, she really wanted to have, you know, it's her space, and she wanted to do things her way. And I realized what it was like to be on the opposite side of that control thing. And I thought, Robin, as good as you have, you know, as much as you have changed recently, you could do even better. Because that's what it feels like when the other person is a control person. And that is who I am. So I really learned a lot from that very short and easy lesson.
So how can you do that inside your own company? How do you give up control to somebody else and become the recipient of the instructions?
I hadn't thought this one through very well, so you'll forgive me for casting about for thoughts, but I just came up with a really good one. So first of all, I really recommend that every CEO do personality profiling on themselves to understand their issues. So I've done everything imaginable, you know, the DISC, the predictive index, Myers-Briggs, you name it, I've taken it. So understanding yourself is really one of the keys. One of the things that I learned about myself in all those many tests is that my personality is one whereby I don't trust people until they really prove themselves. And once they prove themselves, I am all about trust. So, and I saw, you know, like I read it and I just started to laugh because it was so true. So you have to know who you are before you can answer this question. So my suggestion really only works for someone who is like me. But what I found worked really well was that I started hiring only the very best people, and they were able to prove themselves very quickly. And I was able to just like back off and let them do the job because they were able to do a better job than I was anyway.
That's interesting. And that came out of the personality profiling.
It really did.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And I've seen this with other people, and I can relate to it myself, that, understanding who you are and sort of what pushes your buttons is really important. Robin, what do you think are some of the hardest tasks that we have to accomplish as business leaders?
Making money. Keeping our employees happy. In my particular case, maintaining my team, because I shouldn't say in my particular case, in my particular industry, keeping talent is just very difficult. There isn't enough talent to go around to do the kinds of things that we do, and we work really hard to keep our team together.
You know, that's a really common theme. I hear it a lot. And I don't know whether it's because of what's going on in our world, in our economy, in our, if it's something that is really common to smaller companies. But finding really good talent and being able to keep them is a really big issue today.
Well, you know, one of the problems, and I really am dealing with it and trying to figure it out right now, is when you're a small company, the hard part is finding ways to promote your people and give them new opportunities when your business has increased by, you know, 30% or 50% or whatever, and hasn't turned into a public company overnight.
Right.
You know, when you're enormous, there's just so many places to go. But when you're little, there might be one slot, you know. That's, I think, one of the issues that will always, that small businesses will always face. Because you really want that employee who is ambitious, right?
Yeah.
Because if they're not ambitious, they're not going to say, we should do this and let's try that. And there are these opportunities. You really want that, but they're going to want that for themselves too.
Right. So
I think as a small business, it's just endemic to small business, that issue.
Yeah. You want them to be ambitious. You want them to be engaged. You want them to feel challenged. You want them to be willing to take on some risks, but you don't want the risks to be so big that it could totally derail the company. Right. And it's a real challenge. It's a real challenge.
Right.
Do you think that our world today makes it any different to be an entrepreneur than it might have been 10 or 20 years ago?
Oh, I think it's so much easier now. And even 10 or 20 years ago, it was so much easier than it was 50 years ago. My parents never would have even considered being entrepreneurs until, very late in life, my dad became an entrepreneur. But, that wasn't the thing to do back then, right? The thing to do was to get a job with a comfortable company and a pension on top of it. Now it's just so easy to start a business. Look at my business. We're consultants. What is a consultant? It's a desk and a computer and a phone, right?
Right. Or maybe even not a desk, maybe just an internet connection.
Right. I was going to say, maybe if you have the computer, you don't really need the phone. But in any case, the cost of entry is so low. The acceptance of being an entrepreneur is so high. In fact, you can go to a party or whatever it is, or a networking event, and say, I'm an entrepreneur, and people are, jealous that you're an entrepreneur, as opposed to 50 years ago, where they would say, really, like, are you getting a paycheck? So it's something that's really appreciated in our society. My first job opportunity for this summer, between my first year and my second year of the Harvard Business School, I had two options. One of them was to go to American Express, and the other one was to go to this little company in Manhattan that was doing cell phones. And because there was no internet, I couldn't type in cell phone and find out what that meant. So I had to go to the interview and say to them, what is a cell phone? And they weren't, at all taken aback that I hadn't researched it, because there really was no way to do that. And they described it to me, and they told me they had one of two licenses in the city of Manhattan for cell phones. But what did I do? I chose to go to American Express, because that was the thing to do still.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also find that in terms of employment, people looking for jobs think in a much more entrepreneurial way than they did a generation ago. They don't expect to stay very long.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, they think about, just in the way that they think about themselves and market themselves, it's a lot more like entrepreneurs than like employees. So, Robin, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about, in your own experience with your businesses, what have been some of your biggest successes and some challenges?
I think that is almost the same question. So let me start there, and then I can come back and talk about some other successes. But my biggest success has been overcoming my challenges. That's really the way I look at it. I'll add more meat to those bones. So, my biggest challenge was me. When I talked about, going through tragedy and, I kind of sat down and said, okay, let's have a real meeting, Robin, with ourselves. And it took a lot of work, but I really spent a lot of time, thinking about who I was and learning about who I was and figuring out how that affected my business. And I mostly a big challenge was just, the first one was saying, how is this affecting things? And I recognized that I wasn't a very good manager. I wasn't a good delegator. I wasn't a good manager. I was pretty good at owning a business, but I wasn't necessarily a very good leader. I wasn't good at any of those things. And I had to sit down, although it took, years, so I guess I had to sit down and stand up and do lots of other things too, but I really had to start to figure out how I could be a better person. It wasn't even just all business. It was business, it was personal, it was everything. I needed to be willing to change in lots of different ways so that my business and my the rest of my life too could really grow and flourish. You know, all that happened around 2008 when the market died. And before 2008, or right into the debacle, that, you know, the end of 2008, our company was 5 people. And as I, you know, I don't know if these things are just correlative or they're causative, but as I learned to delegate, learned to let my people make their own mistakes, learned to leave them to do their thing, and learn to accept their ideas and even say to them, you decide. We really began to grow. And we had the building blocks, let's say, to be a great business even before then. But and I'll come back to that, but it really took me, I had to put a lot of work into me. Mm-hmm. So that my employees could flourish and stay here, not want to move on. And you know, I still see myself sometimes kind of pulling back in the wrong way, but like I'll notice it. Like I'll sit down and I'll say, okay, bad girl, you know, you should have let him do whatever. But it really was a key point, and I have become very, very big on the topic of personal honesty. Because it took the most brutal personal honesty for me to be able to acknowledge, you know, like they have the 12 steps for the various things you can be addicted to.
Right.
And like the step number one is always admitting you have a problem. You know, like that's why they get up at Alcoholics Anonymous, I guess, and they say, I'm Jane and I'm an alcoholic or whatever it is. You know, like I had to start by admitting that I wasn't very good at these things. Because here I owned a company. And it was even back then a really kind of cool company, but I was unwilling to admit for quite a while that I wasn't very good at those things, and I had to teach myself to become good at those things. And then, let me kind of circle back to the the good stuff, because you said to me, you know, what did you do? What have you done well? Well, certainly overcoming that has been something that I did well, but then. Then there was like goodness that came out of goodness. Then I kind of fell into a virtuous circle whereby, you know, we were already a Google Analytics certified partner and we became a Google Analytics premium reseller. And then I allowed myself to hire salespeople instead of me doing all the sales. And, you know, they sold Google Analytics premium projects and other projects as well, and we were suddenly in a position where we needed more people to hire, people to do consultants to do the work. And then I turned to the head of analytics and said, "Hey, you know, let's talk about how you can do this recruiting piece." And so, like, I could go on and on, but basically, once I was able to overcome my own problems, everything. Almost everything, because like I said, I still fall back, but almost everything turned to goodness. So we're instead of a 5-person company, now we're a 25-person company. Instead of being in 1,200 square feet of space, we moved up to 3 times that, and now we took on another 4 times that. So, you know, we're even large physically. I mean, we're still a small company, but...
But that's a lot of growth. Particularly, it sounds like much of it happened during stressful economic times.
Yeah, it did happen during stressful economic times. It's not clear to me that those times were bad for my industry. So I don't know whether I was also riding the industry boat or not. So in 2008, what happened was that everybody pulled their budgets, no matter what, because nobody really understood what was happening. By the time 2009 came, companies said, if we're going to make a go of it, we really need to cut our budget strategically. And I think a lot of people, companies, I should say, at that time, right around that time, started to recognize how important digital marketing and digital analysis are. And so I think that I'm not. It's not clear to me that the difficult economic times worked against us. They might have worked for us, or it might have been that we were also doing our own thing that was working well. So I don't. I'll never be able to do that that multivariate analysis that you just described. But it would be an interesting one to do.
Yeah. As you were going through some of these ups and downs, what were some of the what were some of the influencers that may have been helpful or pivotal in your thinking?
Well, I really began to read. I'll call them HR books, but they're that's not quite the right word. So I read, for example, Tony Hsia's book, Power, Freedom and Response. I'm sorry, Delivering Happiness. You know,
right.
the
yep.
Zappos book.
Mm-hmm.
And his book was really interesting to me because I really learned from him about hiring a team. Like a big part of what they do, and there, you've probably read the book, have you?
Yeah.
It's a big part of it is there are many themes throughout the book. But the one that really sticks with me is when he had his old company, not Zappos, but the one before that, and they just needed to fill the spots. Like they had slots and they just needed to fill people. And then there was this one day where he realized that he just didn't like the people and it wasn't any fun anymore. And that at Zappos, what he does or they do is that they care so much that they like the people around them. And that the people around them like each other as well. And that's something that I really brought to Lunametrics. So, like, we'll talk about a candidate and we'll say, well, he or she, you know, they could do a good job, but, you know, do we like them? Are they going to fit in here? Is it going to be, are we going to be able to have that kind of, is the fit right? That's really what it comes down to. Is the fit right? And then I think the second really valuable influencer would be Reed Hastings from Netflix. And he actually, you know, he has just that PowerPoint, Freedom and Responsibility. But like there are things from his PowerPoint that I just, or I did and now our director of operations did, adopted really for our handbook. So like I was at the point where we were writing about how much money you get to spend on the road when you're traveling, and I was reading Freedom and Responsibility, and they at Netflix they say just do what's right for Netflix. And you know what? I just changed the employee handbook or asked the person in charge to do that just to say, do the right thing by Lunametrics instead of having some big grid that says here's what you can spend in this city and in that city and the other city. And you know what? It works just as well. Maybe it works better.
It's a really interesting concept. And yeah, I think most places are afraid to do that. Robin, I wondered if we could shift a little bit and talk about what you're working on now that's really exciting.
The thing that I'm doing now, and in a way it's kind of, perhaps I should have done it years ago, but they say that it's so hard to do for yourself what you do for other people. And the thing that I'm really doing right now is working so hard to run our company by the numbers. So I'm just completely dedicated to Source and Medium and original Source and Medium, how people heard about us, attribution for my customers, you know, how many times did they touch us until they became a customer, segmentation by NAICS code, segmentation by geography, you know, just really learning who our customers are in a data-driven fashion. And then, like, putting that information into use.
That's great. That's great. So, if any of our listeners have a need, what are some of the trigger points that would where you might be able to be helpful?
Wait. This is stuff from my business. So I would. Oh, I see what you're saying. So how could I help someone with this kind of thing for them?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I would do this for, we would do this for a customer, because what all I'm saying that I'm doing right now is I'm running a data-driven company. But we as a company What we do is we mostly help with Google Analytics and Google Analytics Premium. So some of that information really does come from your Google Analytics, but I'm mostly working with back-end data, sort of like closed deals, which I can really get right out of Salesforce. I don't need to work with Google Analytics for that. So customers call us up for different reasons. They call us up and say, my Google Analytics are broken. You know, I know my data are bad. Can you fix it? Or they say, I really want that GA premium. Can you sell it to us? Or they say, I've got all this data and I don't really know what any of it says. Can you evaluate it for us? Those are the kinds of things that customers come to us for. What I'm doing for our company is sort of a version of that, but I'm using different data for it.
Right. Okay. All right. And is there anything that's new and exciting that will be coming up and available to customers in the near future?
And that I would be allowed to tell you?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Because they really do tell us a lot at Google, but we're really under such strong NDAs.
Got it.
So I'm sorry.
Yep. That's fair. Lastly, I wondered if you could talk about somebody you know personally who's doing really remarkable work.
You know, every month, I work with this group of four other female CEOs. And our only goal is to get together and talk about our problems and help each other solve them. So there's not any sales there. It's just problems. Problems, and sometimes it's great things that happen. But one of them, I think they're all great in their own way, but since I get to talk about one of them, one of them has done 9 startups. This is her 9th.
That's amazing.
It really is amazing, and I've learned so much just from her.
One is hard enough.
She has done 9 of them. And I think her current company is really cool because she's taught me how to be all about the people. And she's also taught me how to not be all about the people. So, like, one day she sat me down and she said, Robin, she said, if every single person in your company left tomorrow, which they will not, you will still have a company. It will be difficult, but you will still have a company. And so she enabled me to understand that how important it is to hire the right people, just like Tony Shaw and Reed Hastings talk about, but also how important it is to allow them to move on when the time is right. And sometimes you don't even get that option, right? They just say, I'm moving to New York or I'm going to California or whatever. And you just have to kind of grieve privately for that. But her point is, it will still be okay. And I have learned so much from her.
That's a great point. Well, Robin, we're running out of time. And I wondered if you could tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Sure, they can go to our website, lunametrics.com, or check out our blog. They can call us. They can Google us and see our 5,000 top hits. And I think those are the very best ways to learn about us.
Great, great. Well, Robin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Robin Steiff, CEO and owner of Lunametrics. Thank you again, Robin, for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.